Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 111. And I hope everybody had a moment of reflection over Memorial Day weekend and got a chance to be with loved ones and friends and get out and get some hamburgers and hot dogs. I was over at my sister's with my mother and some extended family. So that was a really nice time to spend yesterday for me. And people were commenting on the fact that you don't say happy Memorial Day yesterday, Dave, because, you know, it's supposed to be a moment of remembrance for those who served our country and so many who lost their lives. And I think it can be a little bit of both. Hopefully, people got a chance to enjoy some time with friends and relatives, while also taking a moment to reflect on time served, which my father was a service member. I know you've got family members who served, and hopefully people had a good weekend.
Yeah, you can't say anything nowadays.
No, you can't say anything anymore. You get killed.
Anything you say gets twisted around. That's politically incorrect. This, that, and the other. And boy, are we going to have a good discussion today with us, on the national anthem and all. But I will say this, David. If I die after we do this podcast today, I have not been cheated as a sports fan, I don't think. We talked briefly right before we got on the air here about the sports weekend or the sports, three or four days that we just had. And look, I know the Pirates haven't had a good couple of days, and obviously the Penguins aren't no longer in the playoffs. And right now it's basketball and NHL mainly. It was a good weekend to be a sports fan, I think. And, I think we talked about this not long ago, but is there a play-by-play guy in any sport better than Doc Emrick? He had me, and look, I obviously live in Las Vegas. I'm rooting for Las Vegas to win the Stanley Cup, and especially being as how they're playing the Washington Capitals, who I don't care, Ovechkin, yeah, he might deserve a cup. Nothing in my body will let me root for a Washington or a Baltimore team. The last half period, I guess, of that hockey game last night, Doc Emrick just had me on the edge. I couldn't breathe in that final 2 minutes there. Really had no vested interest in the game. I asked on Twitter, is there a better play-by-play guy? And, of course, the Pittsburgh faithful throw out Mike Lange out there and all. Look, I think Mike does a tremendous job. I've obviously enjoyed his calls, his catch sayings over the year. But in my opinion, Mike doesn't hold a candle to Doc Emrick. I mean, do you any thoughts on that? I mean, have you even tried to call a hockey game?
Yeah, we talked about this. It's incredibly difficult to do. I feel like, look, Doc's great. I feel like we acknowledge that in Pittsburgh every time he's on television. So I don't think it's anything new for people to compliment Doc on the job he does. So, but yeah, I think he's fantastic.
Now, obviously, back in the day, and really up until just he retired, Vin Scully, when it comes to baseball, nobody can weave together a play-by-play and commentary like Vin Scully, was able to do. But in basketball, I mean, and look, I've enjoyed guys like Gus Johnson calling college games over the years. There have been some good ones, obviously, around the NFL and all, but it amazes me in a sport, especially, I mean, you got to remember, you're trying to be up where those guys are and see those numbers and call the game in the fashion that he was able to do it last night. You got to take your hat off and hand it to him.
So let me test the true level of your sports fandom over the weekend. How much time did you spend in front of the television watching either the Indy 500 or the Monaco Grand Prix?
5 minutes.
In toto.
Yeah, in total. In fact, I thought the Indy started later than what it actually did. And I saw an update that Danica Patrick had crashed, and I think really that was one of the main storylines going into the Indy 500 this year. I watched NASCAR more probably, back in the 90s. You know, you got to remember where I grew up. Five Flag Speedway is, of course, in Pensacola, where I'm from, and the Snowball Derby's there every year. And you know, big, you know, in the South, obviously NASCAR is big. So you know, in the past, I've watched a lot of NASCAR. I don't anymore, but I never was big into the Indy or Formula One, you know, style cars.
Yeah, I had a brief dalliance with NASCAR in the late 90s, early 2000s. I don't watch it. I don't Indy. You know, the Formula One is unfortunate. You know, we have my friend and I have a longstanding joke that you know it the race is the day before, and then it's a race to the first turn, and whoever gets the first turn wins. So. Particularly in Monaco, by the way, where you can't pass. There's no chance to pass anybody at any point in time. So, yeah, not on my list of things to do. Although I probably saw a minute of each, and that was enough.
Now, I will watch a little bit of golf every now and then. Obviously, I'll watch the Masters every year, and I'll watch the final round of any major generally. But you know, I flipped a couple of times to the – I think there was a senior tournament this past weekend, and then – one other PGA event, and you know, I spent probably a total of about 5 minutes on that as well too. Mostly, I was stuck to the basketball, the baseball, and obviously the hockey.
Yep. All right. Well, let's get into this anthem thing that was the lead story, you know, from the NFL last week at the owners' meetings, along with some of the formalizing the rule changes and the approval of David Tepper, who. A former Steeler minority owner is now going to be the majority owner of the Carolina Panthers. We'll get into that a little bit later or over the course of the summer. Dave, the thing about the anthem, and it's, you know, there's a lot here to break down, and I'm sure we're going to, no matter what stance anybody takes, there are going to be plenty of people who disagree with them overall. So I'll tell you just kind of where I stand on the overall topic. One is, I've never really understood why we play the national anthem at sporting events to begin with, and it's not a non-nationalistic point of view on my part. It's just I don't understand the relationship, and it's something that becomes formalized as ritual, and then you know you grow up as a kid and that's what you know, that's what you do, but you know the between that and in Yankee Stadium after 9/11, them you know singing America the Beautiful, I guess, after the seventh inning every game and just making it a very U.S., you know, like wrap yourself in the flag type of thing. I never got it. Okay, so if they did away with the anthem before games at sporting events, I'm just fine with that. And again, you know, our universe today is very different than it was in 1945. Coming out of the war when I think some of that stuff started. I think it was some of it might have been instituted in the First World War, you know, sort of patriotic leanings. It's a different world. It's a different environment today. So many of the athletes aren't actually U.S. citizens, not born in the U.S. Many of them don't live in the U.S. In various sports. And obviously in football they are almost universally. Let's just start with that. To me, I don't go to the game to go to sing the anthem, and I don't. You know, all these people are talking about the thoughts on what people should do, and they say they don't want to see people protest the anthem. I don't think nobody goes to the game to hear the anthem singer, right? I mean, is it important to have the anthem be part of sporting events in the U.S.?
I just think it's more true. Look, I grew up in the Deep South. I went to a private grade school where every morning the students assembled in uniform and the flag was raised and the national anthem was played, for starters.
So I didn't have the anthem. We said in grade school, we said the Pledge of Allegiance every day.
Yeah, we sang the anthem every morning in grade school, and then look, you and I both played sports as kids, and even as far as back as T-ball, I remember lining up and the playing of the national anthem. So it's more, you know, is it right or wrong to play it? I don't have the answer to that. All I know is it's always been a part of my life. You know,
anybody who goes to sporting events, it's been part of their life.
Now, is it needed? No, obviously it's not. But I mean, if you start, because there's an issue with it, do you take everything away just because it becomes a social issue? You know,
right. That's it. People don't want to be seen as caving to the issue by, okay, now we're not going to have it. But, you know, if somebody had said 10 years ago, if they had just quietly stopped playing the anthem, nobody would say anything. Now,
there would still be, I mean, look, there, and you can see how this thing is split when it comes to this topic, because there's, you know, well, we started off talking about Memorial Day and all. I mean, there's a lot of people in this country with rich tradition of their families serving in the military, and they take, you know, they take a lot of offense to, you know, things such as the national anthem, not, you know, respect, not proper, what they deem proper respect not being given. And they would take it as this is just another decline of Western civilization, if you will.
Right, right. But the point is, 10 years ago when the teams didn't come out for the anthem, you know, nobody had an issue with it until it became an issue, and then it's an issue and it's out there, and you know, the genie's out of the bottle. You're not going to put the issue away. So I agree with that 100%. Okay, so now to the NFL, and man, does the NFL get these PR things as wrong as you can possibly get them, because the NFL, over the course of when this came out, I think it may be Thursday, the conversation started. And it was kind of leaked piecemeal about what might be going on here. And it was such bad PR for the NFL. Rather than, you know, deciding whatever they decided and putting it out and explaining it, kind of piecemeal comes out that they're gonna impose certain fines potentially and rules. And at no point, after kind of doing a decent job over the last 6 months of kind of getting this thing sorted out, getting players and the Players Association involved in the conversation, they have a owners meeting and they unilaterally come out with a new policy without any contribution or input from the Players Association. So right there, you failed. I mean, you completely failed the process. Right there. I realize the owners own the league, but you know, you want to have this be a collaborative discussion and output, and they didn't. And it's just, it's PR 101 that you do this without kind of, again, mandating owner to player, you know, how this is going to go. And now each team, the way the policy is written, each of the 32 NFL teams will get to make a decision on its own, A, whether A, they're going to participate, B, how they're going to participate, and C, if they protest in any way, shape, or form, a fine will be instituted. And then D, the team will have the option essentially to pay the fine itself for the players or impose some kind of fine structure upon the players that protest, who will then be fined. So it's a hodgepodge of a solution. And just how it was managed to me, Dave, was just, I mean, even if I liked the solution, which I don't love, but it just how they managed it was so bad that they took another massive PR hit that maybe not even totally deserved.
Yeah, and then, you know, basically, it's almost like they're putting it on the, you know, well, they are. They're putting it on the teams now, and it's almost like the NFL is trying to push it off and say, no, it's not us, it's the teams now. But the owners, I mean, the teams make up the NFL. Really?
Yeah, right. The owners put it on themselves, so.
Right, and you know, it doesn't look like they accomplished anything. And I'm afraid now, well, I mean, there's not going to be, you're still going to have certain players on certain teams still do, I think, what they were going to do anyway. And then now you're going to have some teams, just some owners turning their head, such as the Jets, and saying, you know, do what you want. We'll stand behind you and we'll eat the fine. And then you're going to have other teams, you know, I suppose, such as the Steelers, where it's going to be highly frowned upon if you do anything. And here's the funny thing about it, too, is Roger Goodell says there was unanimous, you know, unanimous vote. And then Art Rooney and a few other owners come out and immediately, boy, you know, they must really, Roger Goodell must love his job, because obviously he's more of on the side of the owners.
Well, he works for the owners. So right. He's 100% on the side of the owners.
Right. But on the flip side, you know, they have no problem throwing him underneath the bus at any given opportunity to let him take the brunt of it. And I guess he's paid enough to have that happen to him. But, you know, there was evidently no quote unquote, you know, official vote that went on with the owners. So,
but they did vote, because it was made very clear by both
they had discussions, right?
Well, they had a vote, because both Jed York and Mark Davis said they abstained from the vote. So, well, you know, that was from Tim Kawakami, who's a very good reporter, and he said he got it from the horse's mouth on Jed York. So, you know, if a couple guys feel like they abstained, that would suggest that they also thought there was a vote.
Well, the fact that we're talking about was there or wasn't there a vote based on media reports, there's a problem there.
Yep.
You know, and then Art Rooney comes out and says, you know, I don't think, you know, what is showing respect for the flag? Okay.
And I think what Art meant is the old, you know, the old, was it Abe Fortas, the Supreme Court justice, who said, you know, what, define pornography for me and I'll know it when I see it. I mean, I think Art meant to say, you know, we know what respect for the flag means, but by starting to delineate it, you open Pandora's box again.
Right. And you're back to square one again, you know,
because there's an argument for those who don't understand this issue isn't clear. There is an absolute argument by whether it's Colin Kaepernick, Eric Reid, or anybody else who protested the flag, demonstrated during the anthem, that kneeling is not protesting the flag. In fact, kneeling during the anthem is exactly what the flag represents and gives you the ability to do. Now, not everybody's going to agree with that, but that is certainly an argument that those on that side have made and will continue to make, that they are not disrespecting the flag. And in fact, by when the NFL and other people continue to wrap this whole issue into respect or disrespect of the flag, they are completely conflating points and misunderstanding what they are protesting.
It's a mess. Now, here's something that I really got into, you know, on the internet there. And really, I think a little bit with you on Twitter or whatnot. Why does it seem like the NBA is dealing with their players when it comes to their dealings with players when it comes to social injustices and all and the flag? Why does it seem like they have a better relationship with their? Why does the league in whole and the commissioner seem to have a better working relationship when it comes to these types of things than the NFL does? Because this was confirmed by Sam Farmer first, I think, who posted, look, standing for the national anthem has been in the rules now with the NBA since what year was it that Abdul?
A long time ago, like, you know.
96, right?
96, yeah, right.
Since then, and evidently I think there was something, uh, some maybe amendment done with the CBA, but I know with the there was an amendment to the, I guess, the game operations manual or what have you, that they must stand at attention for the national anthem. But to hear Steve Kerr talk, and I, look, you want to talk about a guy that's not afraid to speak his mind in any setting, it's Steve Kerr, him and Greg Popovich, for sure, when it comes to political issues, social injustice, and those kind of matters. Boy, he makes it seem like, he's throwing stones at the NFL, yet the NBA's sitting there in a glass house. What?
The NBA has there's no wiggle room in the NBA. You stand at attention for the anthem, and the NFL gave players an option. Now, people may not like the option, whatever. The option is to stay in the locker room and don't participate in the event. The answer to your initial question is that it's as simple as they do have better working relations with the Players Association. It's been more collaborative, and they have throughout the years, and particularly during Adam Silver's tenure, which I give him great credit for, he has encouraged guys to be socially involved and to speak their mind. He has never told anybody, they've never directed anybody to, back off, or, as I think, as you pointed out on Twitter, guys were allowed to wear T-shirts and warm-ups that had, strong social messages or slogans involved in that stuff. And the NBA has had a very different message to its players, and it hasn't been. Now, I do think, Roger Goodell, as you said, he is the whipping boy for everything. But I do think over the last 2 years, and ever since they really screwed up the Ray Rice and Greg Hardy situations, I do think the league is doing a better job of trying to find common ground and encourage players to be actively involved. But the NBA never had to go through that, maybe they did in the 80s, but they got past that point. And because of Adam Silver's collaborative stance and his ability to work well with the players union, nobody has brought up the issue of standing for the anthem. Not one, you don't hear it ever. It's never a topic. And yet it is a draconian, if you want to look at it that way. It's draconian in terms of the options that it gives players, because it doesn't give many options. And so that was, your conversation with Ramon Foster on Twitter, going back and forth about that. And Ramon basically saying, well, this isn't as bad as that is. If you want to, compare apples to apples, theirs is, more restrictive. It's just, it's not his point. It's not his spot to get involved in what the NBA players are doing. But he seemed to suggest, they could do different things if they wanted. He wasn't saying they should. It's fascinating. And it's, again, I continually bring up the issue of PEDs and why do we look at it completely different for baseball players than we do for football players? And the fact that, clearly, obviously, no hockey player or NBA players ever use PEDs because nobody ever gets suspended. And it seems to be somewhat that way on this anthem thing. Everybody is jumping down the throat of the NFL, but do they actually realize that the NBA's policy is more restrictive?
Does the NFL frown on their play right now? I mean, being vocal about
they do. Look, it's little, often silly things. Writing expressions on their shoes.
During games, yeah, I mean, there's uniform policies, right? Because of advertisers and this, go back to the whole Jim McMahon thing with the headband.
Even the Reggie Bush with the area code stuff and, different things that do, different levels of, representing or, commenting on social issues.
I guess what I'm getting at is, look, I mean, Ryan Shazier come out for pregame warmups without a shirt on. You have a couple of guys in the Arizona Cardinals the past couple of years come out in what, chicken suits and a ballerina tutu for losing bets or whatnot during warmups. So is there anything that says players can't come out in warmups with all in the same t-shirts that says I can't breathe or any of that stuff? I mean, is that frowned upon? Should the NFL come out and vocally say, or have they in the past said that you know, hey, speak your mind prior to the game, you know, whatever you want to do. Now, when it comes to uniform policy, I understand that. I mean, now, I don't, you know, to me, I think it's neat to see all these painted cleats and all like that. I don't, personally, I don't think that takes away from the uniform policy, but look, I mean, the NFL allows the pink stuff to go on during breast cancer awareness month and all like that. I mean, to me, it becomes a slippery slope when you start allowing stuff like that. You know, I mean, why not let them wear the shit?
Well, that's not allowing stuff. That's full partnership. You know, we're endorsing this.
Sure. That's what I mean. Allowing, you know, put you this way. All players don't have to wear it.
No. Right.
Okay. I mean, you see what I'm getting at here? I mean, what's preventing players from coming out in warm-ups and all unified in T-shirts with a saying on it? To me, I just don't get where there's the disconnect. But I don't see why the NFL – to me, it goes more deep-rooted than just the issue of they're not doing enough when it comes to social injustice. It just seems like overall relationships – and as I think you kind of alluded to, the NBA and their players seem to have a better all-around working relationship when it comes to labor, all issues when it comes to, you know, NBA, the NBA, PA, and the players in general seems to have a better working relationship than the NFL has had with their players in the NFL, PA. Shoot, going all the way back to the dawn of free agency in the NFL. It just, and especially since Roger Goodell took over and all these CBA and issues and all like that. I wonder if it's just more deep rooted than just the social aspect of it. And what I was trying to get Ramon Foster, and look, Ramon Foster, I think, is incredibly bright, and I think they got a good choice there as a union rep, you know, especially now that Charlie Batch is out of the league. In Ramon Foster, he's incredibly smart, very articulate as far as that goes. But it just seemed, you know, I was asking him what, you know, even though the toothpaste is out of the tube right now, it seems like, you know, the NFL is just a few quick decisions and I'm sorry and we're bad away from getting some of this toothpaste back in the tube, if you will. Now look, I think they should have had the CBA or the NFL PA as, you know, some part of what just went down this past week and all, but you know, to me, it doesn't seem as unfixable as a guy like Ramon Foster thinks it is. And the gist of what he kept coming back at me at, I think, is, you know, there's just not enough action. You know, you can wear a T-shirt and there's just not enough action. He was just back to the original social injustice problem. And here's the thing, too, I was watching last night. I don't know if you...
I didn't get the sense that that Ramon Foster was thought it was... a huge problem.
Well, I mean, there's, you know, I asked, you know, is this going to be part, you know, a part of the CBA discussions coming up, you know, 2021, and he says, you know, something to the effect, you don't get it, you know, that it's more about the social injustice problem itself. And it's been so many days since I had that con. I can't remember all the back and forth I had with him, but it really, it felt like I was getting run around in circles.
I understand where you're coming from, and I saw a little bit of that as well. I think his point there at the end was, look, this isn't a negotiating point for us. You know, in terms of, you know, wanting better relations in communities around the country and police brutality issues and things like that, that's not a negotiating point. We're not going to negotiate that point away. So I think that's what he was saying, is like, this is a life issue. This is not a bargaining chip. So I think he was trying to differentiate in terms of how he was looking at that. And that's why I think he was deflecting the conversation away from the 2021 CBA negotiations.
What do these two sides need to do in order to get this thing right? Or will I was watching last night, Dave. I don't know if you saw that series on CNN, the 1968 four-part series that was over the weekend here. I taped it and ran through it real quick. A, because I was born in 68, and B, I like to have a lot of knowledge. I like to learn more about Vietnam and stuff like that. I've really become interested in Vietnam War stuff and that kind of aspects. But during that, they showed. You remember in 1968 Olympics in Mexico is when the two black sprinters got up on the podium after finishing first and second.
John Carlos and Tommy Smith, right?
Right. And they had the black gloves on. They put their fist up in the air. And then they were sent home, you know.
Yeah, they were expelled. Yeah.
From the Olympics. They did not kneel. I mean, they were still standing, you know. I mean, here we are 50 years later now, and I was able to do that math only because I turned 50 this year. But here we are 50 years later, and it's really, it's the same thing, right? I mean.
They are absolutely protesting the same thing, social injustice. And again, look, it comes back to, for a lot of people, it comes back to simply, do you think that is an appropriate way to express your displeasure? Look, I'm pretty sure, you know, 99.5% of the people listening to this podcast understand for particularly, you know, blacks in this country, they have felt like, you know, some of the police brutality issues are significant and legitimate. And if anybody spent the 30 minutes watching the video of the NBA player in Milwaukee from January that just got released last week, you can see how things, how you can feel like, you know, your people are being wronged. And, you know, not everybody's going to agree with that, but I think most people will, and most people don't want to see that stuff happen. And if you watch that video, it's damn uncomfortable. And it's not good when you've got 10, you know, white cops in Milwaukee and you've got a guy standing there and eventually he gets tased and cuffed and, for a minor parking violation, you know, it's not a great thing. So I think people, you know, generally understand that, but then they can understand that and still have the view that this is an inappropriate way to go about trying to make your point. And, you know, if you're on Twitter and you follow John Steigerwald, he you know, makes this point, you know, he has 4 points that he makes on Twitter. Clemente and Bradshaw were the best. You know, you know what the 4 points are if you follow them. But and one of them is, you know, you don't get to protest on the employer's dime. Now, comparing what, you know, Dave or I does or as one of our listeners does at their job to what an NFL player does is really silly. So, you know, because they have a platform for a limited time in their lives and for some of them a very limited time in their lives where maybe they can call attention to something in a level that none of us, many of us won't ever be able to do. And so they use that platform. Now, again, it doesn't mean you have to agree with it. It's on somebody else's dime in the sense that you're working for somebody and you're that has nothing to do with your job description. But if you feel like it is enough and important enough, then, you know, guys will use that platform. And again, that comes down to very simply whether you agree with that's how somebody should go about doing something that they feel is important. And, you know, when Kaepernick does things like wears the pig socks or the you know, Raul or Fidel Castro shirt, it's going to leave a bad taste in people's mouth and they're going to forever everything that he does that's good, giving away a million of his own dollars to 10 different, you know, causes that he feels are important. Everybody will diminish everything he does that's good because of, you know, some of the dumb things he's done. I get that as well. And it's on both sides of the argument. It's not just one side of the argument. So it is a very complicated, very nuanced thing that I also think is, and we've talked about this in different issues in the past, Dave, that once somebody has their mind made up, it's almost impossible for most people to listen intently to the other side of you and then change their mind. And I'll put myself in that category as well. It's very, very difficult to change your mind once you feel like you've come to a conclusion.
And see, I think right now that's where these NFL players are in this. And I kind of, that's the way I felt that Ramon Foster is at right now. You know, it's anything that the NFL does now is going to be the wrong thing in this whole thing. That's the way I've always been raised, David, to instead of continuing to bitch about the problem, find solution how to solve the problem. You know, and look, I understand players are trying. To me, there's not enough on either side right now of trying to find a good solution for this problem. I don't think we're far away from it. If the NFL tomorrow or today came out and said, look, we handled that all wrong this past week. We would like players to stand for the anthem. If you want to interlock arms, that's fine. If you want to wear a black glove and raise your fist over your up high like those sprinters did as a show of solidarity or whatever, have at it. If you want to wear T-shirts in pregame or even during the national anthem, we're fine by that. Now, obviously, I think the players have to be in full uniform, right? During the anthem in the NBA, right?
Yeah, players, you know, in sweats and uniform. Yeah, whatever they're, you know, yes, the answer is yes.
What's the solution here, David?
The solution is to sit down and have the discussion about it beforehand. And unfortunately, you know, maybe they would have come up with this same policy, but once you impose it without having, you know, input from the other side, then it's, you know, obviously you got a problem. So I don't know. I mean, look, I think this policy is going to go into effect, and I don't know that there's anything – I don't know that the Players Association is going to have a legal footing to, you know, have – bring some kind of court case that is going to have be very impactful. It's just unfortunate again that they didn't get the input, that they didn't release the policy together and say, you know, we as an organization, the NFL, we jointly, this is how we're going to go do this going forward. That would have been a hell of a lot easier than this. And so we'll see. I don't know. I mean, it's out of the public consciousness now for, you know, the time being, but come August 15th for week of the first, you know, preseason games, it'll rear its ugly head again. I don't, you know, I'm guessing we won't hear a lot about it from here to there, but we'll hear about it when the time comes.
Yeah, but we're going to see. And look, I mean, telling players to stay in the locker room, don't think that they're not going to get singled out. You know, there's going to be a selection of beat writers from each team counting players.
Oh, yeah, I think that, you know, that'll last 2 weeks and that'll be done. Honestly, as the season went on this past season, you know, nobody was reporting on, you know, when the Seahawks had, you know, let's just make up a number, 10 players kneel after, you know, before each game. I mean, after they did it twice, you know, they did it the rest of the season, but nobody, I mean, it was, you know, wasn't a story.
You know, in essence, does the NFL just not want players to kneel and that's it? I mean, will they be able to lock arms? Will they be able to put their fist over their head or whatever? Is the whole issue just standing?
I don't think that's the whole issue. I think that's encompasses a lot of the issue.
I mean, you know, knowing disrespect when you see it sounds very vague. in this policy, right? I mean, the NFL has handled this very poorly, especially this past week, and I just wonder what the players really want the NFL to do more of.
That's a good question.
I mean, is it? I just keep wanting to go back to why, even though the NBA has had these players in the rules that they have to stand at attention for going back however many years now.
20 years.
And the fact that it seems like, and this is obviously an idiotic statement, it seems like the only issue is NBA players allowed to run around in T-shirts with whatever sayings they want prior to pregame being – being the only difference, I mean, there has to be more than that. I mean, what do the NFL players want at this point? Do they want just to be able to allowed to do whatever the heck they want on the sideline? You know, kneel, turn their back, whatever. You know, obviously turning the back to the flag, I think, would be a sign of disrespect, right?
Probably, yep.
I mean,
I don't know that anybody's done that.
Is that next?
I don't think it's next, because I don't think the whole point has been to disrespect the flag. I mean, that's these
guys.
Right,
right. And I don't either. I don't either. But they seem to want to go 180 here with everything. I don't think Colin Kaepernick kneeling is him wanting to show or feeling like he's showing disrespect to the flag. Now, several people will take it that way.
Oh, right? A lot more than several.
Right. Half, you know, probably divide it down to half. I mean, because a lot of people just feel that you should be standing for the flag. I think he's doing it to draw attention to himself, so it's drawn, so it focuses a spotlight on his cause.
Of course, yeah, absolutely.
You know, now it's all optics, right? It's all about the ball bearings.
I mean, yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a lot of things. It's a lot of things, and it's a little more nuanced than I think a lot of people want it to be.
I mean, look, I have no issue with them at this point now locking arms, you know, standing and all like that. I just, there's not going to be a solution to this anytime soon. You know, this is going to go on for a while. I just wonder what the players really want right now.
Well, that's a fair question.
And that was kind of really what I was trying to get out of Ramon Foster. Do you think this will play a part in CBA negotiations any come 2021?
I don't know. A lot of territory to cover from here to there. I can't imagine this is going to be something that they haven't sorted out in the next 3 years. So I don't think it'll be a driving point. No, I mean, first of all, 99% of all those things that, you know, as Major League Baseball showed, you screw it up and start negotiating things like seats on buses as opposed to dollars, and then you're probably going to lose, get hammered in the negotiation. So this is not a dollars and cents type thing. I don't think that they view it as a bargaining chip. So I don't think it'll be a big component of that now.
What are we going to do during the summer of 2021?
Yeah. Well.
Do you think it's going to be a longer lockout than it was last year? Do you think the
was there a lockout last time?
Didn't the owners lock out the players last time?
I don't know. Did they? I don't know. I don't remember.
2011 NFL lockout, right?
Oh, it was over the summer, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, hold on here.
Nobody missed any time.
No, what I mean is, I mean, during the negotiations there, I mean, nothing went on, right?
Right.
Yeah, there was it was called a lockout.
The money keeps going up. Guys have limited amount of time, so, you know, it's in everybody's best interest to get things sorted out. But you know, if guys miss the summer, I don't think nobody's crying about it.
Do you think any games will be lost in 2021?
No, I doubt it.
I think there's a chance it happens this time. I do. That's the only way I think to get the owner's attention is to have them start losing money like that. And we'll see. But I mean, that's
different when you have a guy who's worth $1 billion worth $5 billion losing a little bit of money versus a guy whose net worth is zero losing $1 million.
Right, and a lot of your league, these guys make less than $1 million a season, you know. And those guys would be clamoring to want to play. and not losing a year off their life, as part of a lockout or whatnot. So it'll be interesting to see how all this goes down. But look, the players kind of caved the last time and gave in. They better get what they want this next time around. You know, so we'll see. Now that we've lost half our listenership.
Permanently.
I suppose we should talk a little bit of football. And obviously the Steelers, the second week. Do you have anything else to add on all this, David?
No, I don't. My overarching thing is the NFL handled it wrong, but I do not think this will be a really divisive thing come the season.
My overarching thought is that they definitely handled it wrong, and I can't help but think that they're only about three steps away from getting it back right again. And I in no way, shape, or form know what those three steps are. It'd be nice if the Players Association came out or said something. Look, this is what we really want, and at least know what both sides are fighting for, kind of deal there. So that's hopefully we won't have to talk about this much more because I know our listenership don't tune in. But I mean, look, this is topical. It's been something we've been meaning to get at for the last couple of shows here and haven't. So now we've tackled it. It's time to move on. The Steelers OTAs, week two of OTAs, get underway today, David, and not much to preview as far as it comes to this. I think a few people have mentioned to me on Twitter that Juju Smith-Schuster is supposed to be back at practice this week. So obviously that'll be a good sign if that happens. Maybe not. We'll find out what held him out of the last couple of practices there. It sounds like the rookies are doing what they're supposed to do. If you remember back a year ago, David, we had to starting the initial talk of TJ Watt and how, he's running with the first team and started to get inklings of those kind of things. I don't think we're going to see a rookie start on defense this year, though, right?
I'd be shocked if Edmund starts on defense.
We might see him get playing time as the year progresses in certain sub packages, but barring injury, it would be a surprise if he's on the field, full fledged starter right there. That's one thing I think that I take away from a difference between last year and this year. James Washington, is there a little bit too much? I mean, who had the more pressure on him, Juju last year or James Washington this year?
I don't know that there's a ton of pressure on either of them. I mean, hopefully, if James Washington has as good a year as Juju, that'd make Steeler fans, dance. That'd be great. But I don't know. I never looked at it as pressure for Juju. It's just you hoped he came in and could contribute. And I kind of look at it the same way for James Washington. Look, I think he's going to play, and I think he'll end up playing. We've talked about these numbers, 500 snaps. So, if he does more than that, it's because things are going great, or hopefully not because somebody got hurt. But he's going to be a part of this offense.
Do you want Justin Hunter on this roster this year, and will he be on the roster?
I mean,
if you had your druthers between Hunter and DHB, I mean, could it be? Is it going to be an either or a neither? I mean, it won't be both, barring injury.
Shouldn't be both. Sure as heck, shouldn't be both. I mean, here's the thing is. This is where you kind of leave it. Look, it's not as if they don't know who both guys are. So DHB's been around for, 4 or 5 years? This will be a fourth year maybe. And Hunter, they had them all last year. So nothing's new. So the evaluation shouldn't be hard. So this is one of those, okay, I trust in, who's ever making the decision, whether it's Mike or Kevin or whomever. This shouldn't be a hard decision. You know the talents of both. You look and see what part of the roster needs that skill set, whether it's special teams play or a big receiver, and you fill accordingly.
There's been a lot of buzz about Marcus Tucker this offseason.
There was a lot of buzz about Justin Hunter last offseason to preseason. Yeah, I mean, it's OTAs.
Right. Hunter, though, you know what you have there, you even knew what you had there going into last year. And one of the things that's going to hurt him is the fact that he doesn't play special teams. And unless he pulls a DHB like DHB did during his, you know, stopovers in Indy there, you know, it's hard to fathom Hunter making this roster. Period. I mean, it's still, even though DHB doesn't give you anything as a receiver, really, and hasn't for a couple years now, he still gives you that aspect on special teams. I wonder if Tucker can be a little bit of both for them. So, you know, I think there's a reason to think that there's why they're, you know, to think that the buzz about Tucker is real. And that he does have a little legitimate shot at making a roster here. Here's the thing. I mean, is Eli Rogers even going to – I mean, is Eli – is there going to be another young receiver in addition to, you know, let's say, you know, obviously Antonio Brown, Juju, James Washington. Let's assume, and it's dangerous at this point, that Tucker is one of five. Who's going to be the fifth? I mean, is it going to be an outsider? Is it going to be Eli Rogers?
Eli Rogers is going to make the team.
You think so?
I do.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, if he's healthy, I you know, absolutely expect him to make the team. And it sounds like he'll be healthy, so.
Yeah, not even under contract right now, but you know, you just wonder maybe if somebody else can step up like the young kid, like the rookie tryout guy. I mean, out of Youngstown State there that they signed after the rookie mini camp there. I don't know. There's a lot of uncertainty, I think, at that number four and five position that still needs to figure out moving forward here. Here's a question that Matthew Marksy posed on Steelers Depot this morning. I think it's worth worth discussing. And Vance McDonald, you know, had a quote last week. You know, hopefully bigger part of the offense and all like that. What will Jesse James' role look like in 2018?
I don't think it'll look dramatically different than this past year. I mean, you know, McDonald stays healthy. He's been with will have been with the team for, you know, the entire offseason, which he didn't have last year. So, you know, his role ideally expands a little bit. I don't expect Jesse's role to change much. I don't think it's going to expand. I don't think he's going to lose a lot of playing time. So I expect, you know, more or less the same.
I think you could see more McDonald this year.
I think you will see more McDonald this year, you know, depending on health. He's not had a great track record of health. But, you know, I think Jesse's still going to get his time.
Is it going to be more in a Matt Spaeth role?
Well, that will be, you know, hopefully Jesse continues to improve as a blocker. I mean, look, Jesse's one of those guys where, you know, he does everything fine. He doesn't excel as a receiver. He doesn't excel as a blocker, but he's fine as a you know, number two NFL tight end. He's fine. I mean, this is not a disparaging of Jesse James. This is a guy who's a fifth round pick out of Penn State. You know, he wasn't a real high pedigree guy. And he's done the job for the Steelers. He has been a contributing member. So, he's not going to the Pro Bowl ever. But he is absolutely a guy who doesn't hurt you to be on your 53-man roster. Now, having said that, you know, the Steelers have two positions here over the past couple of years at, you know, inside linebacker and tight end, where I think they'd like to be better than they have been on their roster. And they've shown that at the inside linebacker position with Dont'a Hightower and the Rashawn Evans. And so, you know, take from that what you will. They haven't really, you know, they were able to go get Vance McDonald at the end of training camp last year. You know, not quite similar to how they got Joe Hayden, but they were able to make a deal and improve the position. I don't think they're elite at the position. I think we both like Vance McDonald a lot and what he can do in terms of catching a football and opening the middle of the field. And maybe at this stage, he's maybe a more dangerous receiver than Heath Miller was at the end of his career. But obviously neither of these guys are the blocker that Heath was. And, you know, again, I'll be surprised if next year tight end isn't a position they target, but I think they're fine with what they have if they stay healthy.
McDonald last year, when healthy, was a very good blocker. I think he was a better blocker last year than the last 3 years of that Heath Miller was in town. Now, obviously, going back to Heath Miller's early days, Heath Miller was a very good blocker. I guess what I'm getting at here is, look, I mean, how much two tight end sets, three tight end, you know, two tight ends and an extra offensive lineman, are we going to see a little, you know, how's that balance going to be this year when it is 11 personnel this year, which we're going to see a whole heck of a lot of? I mean, that's the 11 personnel is the most used personnel grouping around the league, I'm sure, unless you're in Jacksonville. Is Vance McDonald going to be on the field?
Yeah, he'll be on the field most of the time. So, six. I think Vance McDonald will play.
You think it's going to be 60-40 split or a little bit more?
I would say this. I think Vance McDonald's going to play 55 to 65% of the snaps, and Jesse James is going to play 45 to 50% of the snaps.
Okay. I think that's right. I mean, but you expect McDonald to play the lion's share, right?
Well, I expect him to play a little bit more.
Okay. Look, they need if you can Vance McDonald, I keep wanting to call him Vance Johnson. Vance McDonald did during that playoff game against Jacksonville is kind of what you would like to see in different games, you know, in select games throughout the 2018 season. There are going to be times, I think, where you need to rely a little bit more on your tight end. And McDonald, this is a big season for Vance McDonald, right? Because, I mean, he's still got quite a few years left on his contract with the Steelers, but at the same notion, it don't cost anything to cut him either. So, and Jesse James is in the final year of his rookie deal. You'd have to think there's not going to be a strong push to re-sign Jesse James, right? I mean, is Jesse
James at $1.5 million? You know, we've seen the Steelers have plenty of guys who make $1.5 million to $2 million, and Jesse James will be fit right in on that list of guys.
Do you think Jesse will get a new contract by the start of the regular season?
This regular season?
Right.
But I think I would bet Jesse James is on the team next year.
Okay. I'm hearing a little bit of echo there, but do you sign him right before free agency starts? Is he one of those?
He's one of those guys you sign for $1.5 million at, you know, a 2-year or 3-year deal and you know, pay as you go.
Is Vance McDonald on this team in 2019?
But I don't know how much Vance McDonald is going to make. So, I mean, I expect tight end, you know, to be a priority in the draft. So we'll see. But, you know, Vance McDonald's not going to make $4 million in 2019. And I wouldn't think. I'll caveat that a little bit.
He is scheduled to make 4.2 and then has a roster bonus of his roster bonus is $750,000. His workout bonus, $150,000. So when you add all that add all that together, $5.1 million is what his cap number's set to be.
Yeah, he's not making that.
I think he has. If he plays like we think he can play and stay healthy.
Look, if he has 60 catches and 6 touchdowns and averages, you know, 10 yards a catch, you would consider that number. Yes.
That's why I say I think this is going to be a key season for Vance McDonald. But regardless, I mean, this team still drafts a tight end maybe kind of early next year, right?
Yep, I would think so.
Okay. He's one guy that look, I mean, he's going to have – you can go ahead and write that down that, you know, if he stays healthy throughout a season, he's going to have like 5 or 6 drops. But on the flip side, I think you saw in that playoff game against the Jacksonville Jaguars what you can – get out of him. So I think he's a very intriguing guy, and especially when it comes to the red zone this year. And Jesse James, he is what he is at this point. And really, Vance McDonald is as well, too. It's just you would just like to see Vance McDonald be able to stay on the field. And the fact that he has a whole offseason to work with Roethlisberger and the rest of the offense is obviously a positive there. Okay, a few other this year's undrafted free agent class, David. Look, I mean, it's still early here. A lot of things can happen, but it really looks to be one that's maybe one of the better undrafted free agent classes the Steelers have had in a number of years here. I went back and looked at all the sacks that Ola Adeniyi out of Toledo had during his senior year there. There were a few impressive sacks mixed in there. Now, make no mistake there, he is one of these undersized tweener guys that really you have to really see how he's going to function as a dropper. But the fact, here's the thing with him, and it's the same with Keon Adams. These guys are going to have to contribute on special teams to make this roster, because at no point should we have to see Keon Adams or Adeniyi or whoever the number four and or number five outside linebackers on this team be on the field. I mean, right now it's Bud Dupree, it's T.J. Watt, and you know, some Chickalo mixed in there at some point there. But Adeniyi, it's going to be interesting to watch. I think there's a decent chance that you see both maybe Adeniyi and Keon Adams both make the 53-man roster this year. But definitely some fun things to look at on tape with him, especially when it comes to the run. But the fact is, this is an undrafted guy, an undersized one, a little bit undersized one, tweener, if you will, at that. Patrick Morris, the undrafted center out of TCU. I haven't dug really deep into his tape at all, but Alex did have a nice breakdown of him on Steelers Depot this past week. This is a guy that really, really looks like he has a potential down the road. Now, does that mean he's going to make the 53-man roster this year? Probably not, barring injury, but I think that this is a guy that could be slated to be on your practice squad this year. And Greg Gilmore was the other one. I kind of dove deep into the tape here. The defensive tackle, undrafted free agent, the other high-priority undrafted free agent, if you will, out of LSU. Few nice things when it came to his sacks. Not a lot of high quality ones, but a lot of good effort ones there. A little stiff at times. Definitely going to be interesting to see maybe how the battle between him, Joshua Frazier, and Daniel McCullers works out. You know, if any of those three guys can show that they can be the backup nose tackle in a 3-4 base defense and give you something maybe as an occasional pass rusher, should they dress in a sub package, you know, situation when only two defensive linemen on the field, those are the ones to potentially watch. But I mean, there is a little something worth noting, I thought, when I went going back through the film on Greg Gilmore. Outside of that, when it comes to undrafted free agents, we already talked about Quadre Henderson a little bit there, and Quadre is going to – you don't expect Quadre to make this 53, right?
I don't expect him to. He has an outside – I mean, look, he has a path. You know, we talked about this when he was signed. He has a path that's very apparent. I mean, he has to win the punt return job and show that he's going to be the primary kick returner and show that he's capable, you know, of doing more than running a jet sweep. But, you know, we talked about the lack of clarity at the fourth and fifth wide receiver spot. If he shows that he can be competent at you know, a fifth guy if necessary as a receiver and be the number one return man, he can make the team. But I don't expect him to make the team.
He's got the Stephon Logan path.
He certainly is a guy you would think would be on the practice squad if he shows the return skills.
I don't think he will be.
Okay.
I don't think he'll even make the practice squad this year. All right, 10 total linebacker spots this year
on the roster.
Yeah, 10 total. Or are you going to go
no.
nine?
Nine or eight? Just because they don't have got it. I don't know who they'd be. I mean, they get 900 safeties. So if all the safeties are going to make the team, you know, one of those linebackers isn't.
Yeah, I think it ends up being nine again. or nine, if you will. 10 definitely seems like overkill. I will be surprised if it's eight, to be honest with you. Look, I mean, there's a lot of buzz. Matthew Thomas is another one of those undrafted ones that we've already talked about that should have been mentioned in the previous three there. Probably has the easiest path of all the undrafted free agents this year when it comes to a spot. But once again, he's going to have to show something on special teams. But he could be your fourth inside linebacker there. You know, I think. And then you would expect them probably to keep five, I guess, outside linebackers this year. So I think nine's going to be the number there. But as you said, you know, are you going to keep – I mean, you're going to probably keep 10 total defensive backs at least, right? And five of them might be safeties this year.
Yep.
And then, you know, five corners or whatnot. So plenty of time to worry about that there. Look, there's just really not much to talk about. I wrote more about how Gerald Hawkins has to maybe show position flexibility this summer. We'll see if that ultimately comes to fruition here. There's been no word of that happening so far. There was someone on Twitter thinks he found a leak as far as the throwback jerseys go, David. I know you could probably could care less about what they ultimately use as the throwback jerseys there, but some according to this supposed leak on the Pro Shop website of the Steelers, it might be from the 1979 season with the block letters and all like that. Thoughts either way?
Yeah, I haven't seen them. 1979 didn't seem that far away. You know, when it's uniforms during my lifetime, it's hard to envision them as throwback uniforms.
Yeah, I was that. Well, it means we've gotten old.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I mean, I can remember running around in the DeFranco Harris, Terry Bradshaw, Sears and Roebuck jerseys as a child. I don't think back then. I don't think they came with the names on the back of the jersey either. Boy, how times have changed. But I think there's a portion of the fan base clamoring for the block style numbers and letters to make a return. I've been one of those ones that would like to see those Batman style ones from the 60s be used. Here's the thing. The speculation will end tomorrow being Wednesday, because that's when the Steelers are supposed to announce what their throwback jerseys for the 2018 season will be. It sounds like Art Rooney II is going to do his best for this team to wear the color rush jerseys again this year, so fans can look forward to that as well. With that, I think that's all we got here. In the meantime, we'll be back on Friday, either myself or David, or myself and Alex Kazora. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. or at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.